The views and opinions of the host, guests, and callers of Radio Free Arfcom do not necessarily reflect those of AR15.com, BBS Radio, or their advertisers. When any techniques, skills, or theories are presented, they reflect the practices and opinions of the individual presenting them, but not necessarily those of Radio Free Arfcom, AR15.com, or BBS Radio. In all circumstances, Radio Free Arfcom, AR15.com, and BBS Radio expressly disclaim any liability that may result in the use or misuse of any information featured in this program.
Transmission begins.
5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Here we go.
Let's go.
All this stuff you've heard about America not wanting to fight, wanting to stay out of the war, is a lot of horse dung. Americans traditionally love to fight. All real Americans love the sting of battle.
I know not what course others may take, but as for me, give me liberty, or give me death.
Radio Free Arfcom starts now.
Good evening, fellow Arfcom members. My name is Benjamin, and it's now time for your Radio Free Arfcom, the Internet's voice for AR15.com, broadcasting live from South Florida. This is your show, so feel free to call us at 415-762-1161 and visit the Radio Free Arfcom forum on AR15.com. I'd love for you to share your thoughts and comments with us here at Radio Free Arfcom. And remember, if you or your company is interested in supporting or sponsoring Radio Free Arfcom, please visit the Radio Free Arfcom forum on AR15.com and send me an instant message to reach out to thousands of potential customers. And please visit AR15.com's site sponsor links and support Radio Free Arfcom and AR15.com by purchasing a team membership in the AR15.com store. Let's get started. As always, I like to encourage the listening audience to submit show topics, ideas, and potential guests as soon as possible so I can book them ahead of time for future shows. A slight change for those of you on AR15.com that may not have noticed. We changed my username to Benjamin to match the name you hear here on the show. Now you can email me at benjamin@ar15.com or simply send an instant message to me, Benjamin. We hope this clears up a bit between my online presence and my personality here on Radio Free Arfcom and make it easier for you listeners to identify with me, your host. Moving on. On tonight's show, we will start off with listener comments. We'll recap last week's show. I'll cover the news briefs. We'll do the Armed Citizen column. We'll discuss the new issue of Guns and Ammo magazine that just came in my mailbox the other day. Our guest tonight will be Joe DeBurgalis from the NRA and Valinda Rowe of Illinois Concealed Carry. We had planned on having a third guest tonight, but he got sick and canceled at the last minute. So on tonight, listeners, I'd appreciate if you could give us a hand and lend us your voices and call us up and feel free to comment or bring forth any topics you'd like to talk about. We've got plenty of time for you. As always, we'll end the show with the zombie tip of the week. I'll begin the show by addressing your comments and criticisms about me and the previous week's show, as well as any issues you, the audience, brings to my attention. For those of you following along online, we will go to the Radio Free Arfcom forum and discuss last week's show. Last week, we had on Rich Cabral from ShortRifles.com talking about his setups for the M1A or M14 rifles and his bullpup conversion. It was a nice conversation. I encourage you to check out ShortRifles.com for more info for your M1A or M14. We also had Tom Miller from Spikes Tactical, who was talking about the new product lines for the AR-15 platform, as well as some of the specifications that make the Spikes Tactical rifles some of the best values in military spec rifles out there on the commercial market now. We seem to have quite a few listeners checking in, so I do appreciate all the listeners that are tuning in and responding. Like any other venture, I do appreciate the comments, and the only way I can make this show better for you listeners is if you guys go ahead and post on the forum and tell me what I need to be doing and what you want to hear on the show. A couple of requests. One was, hey, you should get Mark Westrom from Armalite to discuss a little history of the 308 AR, and I am checking into that. We did have a couple of good call-ins last week, so I do appreciate that. And make sure that you guys who missed the show, go ahead and catch it on the link which has been broadcast up on Radio Free ARFCOM on the forum. So feel free to tune in if you missed last week's show. And we will go to the news briefs at this point from the NRAILA.org. For those of you following along, Arizona, from the Yuma Sun, the Arizona's new non-permitted, I guess you could say, took effect. In other words, non-permitted meaning now you no longer in Arizona need to have a concealed weapons permit to carry legally concealed, which is a great step forward. We hope that that continues nationwide. According to the Arizona CCW, a newsletter for their concealed carry, about 154,000 residents in the state already have the permit. The individuals with the permit, also many are still getting them, so they don't have to go through future background checks for firearm purchases, and also the permits recognized in about 30 states if they do leave their home state. So while it's not required, which I agree with, that you shouldn't have to be have a permit requirement to get your to carry a concealed weapon, it is nice that they still allow you to have it in case you want to go forward out of the state and potentially carry your firearm somewhere else. Also, Louisiana, the right to carry in church law has signed into law on July 6th. It allows churches or other religious institutions to authorize people with concealed weapons permits and who have passed required training to bring weapons into houses of worship as part of a security force. So good for them for making sure that their churchgoers are safe at the hands of law-abiding concealed permit holders. Coming out of Utah, the number of people licensed to teach Utah's concealed weapons classes is growing. As of July, Utah has certified more than 1,100 instructors for its concealed carry program. That's up from 926 at the end of last year. So good for you people in Utah. Now your opportunities to get NRA-qualified firearm training has increased. So go ahead, and if you haven't got your permits already in Utah, go ahead and try to get them. From Florida, we have the concealed weapons permits and applications skyrocketing, and those of you who are also residents like me know that the applications are continuing to roll. We continue every week to have basically full classes at the gun store of people wanting to take the concealed weapons class. Florida issued 175,555 new licenses between July 1st, 2009 and June 30th, 2010. Up from 25,352 new licenses 10 years earlier. And they go on to say in that article from Ocala.com that the Department of Agriculture, who processes our licenses, is still backlogged, which is no surprise given the number of permit applicants. continuing on the Armed Citizen column this week from the NRA.org. As 64-year-old Philip Dubs returned to his home in Indianapolis, Indiana, he noticed his door had been kicked in. Armed with his .40-caliber pistol, Dubs searched the house and found burglar Brian Tuggle in a bedroom. Fearing for his safety, Dubs fired a shot which struck Tuggle in the chest, then retrieved a phone and called 911. Tuggle was taken to a local hospital and listed in critical condition. Earlier in the year, Dubs' home had been burglarized, at which point he vowed not to be a victim again and obtained his right to carry permit. Dubs' neighbors were supportive of his actions, with neighbor James Norwood remarking, "He did the same thing I would do or anybody else would do. It's human. You've got to protect yourself and your family." Police agreed, with Lieutenant Kevin Kelly stating, "It does appear to be a legitimate case of self-defense." "I would think so. With a man kicking in your door, that would be arguably the most legitimate case for self-defense in defense of your property and your family and your life." From humanevents.com, what's new in the gun industry? The Smith & Wesson self-defense series, which includes the new SD9 and SD40 firearms, both semi-automatic. We will also be discussing later on in the program the new Bodyguard series as well from Smith & Wesson. Continuing on, the Henry Repeating Arms Golden Boy Military Service Tribute Edition. Henry has created a special edition that celebrates the distinguished service of our men and women in uniform. A portion of the proceeds from each sale will be donated to the American Legion, the VFW, the Wounded Warrior Project, and the Fisher House for Military Families. Also, Nikon has incorporated the latest sight technologies into its M223 line, dubs it the new ballistically matched technology rifle scope for AR platform rifles. Also, in 2010, Kimber has introduced a specialized lineup of 1911 45s, as well as two new rifles, the 84L Classic and the 8400 Patrol. Go to Kimber America for more information on that. Bushmaster is also offering two new rifles, the MOE M4 type carbine, which includes all your favorite Magpul fanboy furniture on it, and also the ATAX M4 carbine, which is a camouflaged version of their M4 carbine. So that is what's new on the gun industry. For links and more info, please go to humanevents.com. Maryland sues over the permit for their handguns. The Second Amendment Foundation and a Baltimore County, Maryland man sued Maryland authorities in federal court because the man's handgun permit renewal was turned down on the grounds that he cannot demonstrate a, quote, reasonable precaution against apprehended danger. They say that Raymond Woolard was originally issued a carry permit after a man broke into his home during a family gathering in 2002. His permit was renewed in 2005 after the man who broke in was released from prison. The man now lives about 3 miles from Woolard. The lawsuit alleges that individuals cannot be required to demonstrate that carrying a handgun is necessary as a reasonable precaution against apprehended danger as a prerequisite for exercising their Second Amendment rights. Plaintiffs are seeking a permanent injunction against enforcement of the Maryland provision that requires permit applicants to demonstrate cause for the issuance of a carry permit. So basically what they're saying is that they're denying this gentleman his rights because some bureaucrat or politician is in position of power deciding who and who should not have the right to self-defense. And hopefully when this goes through, it will make Maryland recognize the individual rights of people being able to carry regardless of what the politicians in power might think is necessary or not for that particular purpose. on National Review on July 29th. There's a thread on Air15.com about this. It's 1 month after McDonald, the state of the Second Amendment. And bottom line is, it's not over yet. Pending lawsuits across the country will further shape how the Second Amendment will be applied regarding the new law in Chicago, ban on having more than one assembled and operable firearm in the home at any time. Also, California is facing court. Gun show promoters are trying to get their right to have gun shows again. So there's a couple different things that are going through in the wake of McDonald. A lot of new litigation sending through the court systems for people trying to obviously exercise their rights in the wake of McDonald. So as Joe and I have talked about, this is just the smoke needs to clear the barrel before we actually figure out what the implications are going to be for McDonald and how it's going to apply. So give it time, folks. The NRA and the lawyers and everybody are doing the best they can to try to make sure that everybody's rights are protected and fighting the legislation as they can. I have in my hands the new issue of Guns and Ammo magazine. This is the September 2010. A few interesting things I found in the magazine that may be of interest to the AR15.com audience. On page 5, Crimson Trace has an ad, and it's for the Crimson Trace MVF-515. It combines a Crimson Trace laser with our tactical light and vertical foregrip. And that looks like a product that I'm sure that some of you members out there on AR15.com will be looking for and attracted to. So I figured I'd bring that to light. Judging by the picture, I'm sure it will be quite a high-demand product in the gun store. We'll see about when they actually hit the shelves. If I do get my hands on one, I will be the first to tell you what I think of it. So we will let you know the update on that as soon as we get it in our hands. On page 14 in the news briefs for the Shooter's Almanac, the ATF reverses itself. Under the new interpretation, any shipment of a firearm by a manufacturer to any agent or business that includes engineering or design firms, lawyers, testing labs, gun writers, etc., for a bona fide business purpose is to be a transfer under the GCA of 1968. If a gun company wants testing done in an independent lab, the gun must now be transferred using a Form 4473 and an NICS check as if it were being sold at retail. If the test facility does not hold an FFL, the gun must be transferred to a nearby dealer, and the dealer now becomes responsible for tracking the firearm on his records. So, in other words, they are creating much more paperwork for not only the manufacturers, but also the end users, as well as people like gun writers, as well as gun shops, who are going to be having to do all these transfers. And while it may be, you know, okay for some of the gun dealers who actually would make money on the transfers, that's just going to pass the bottom line on down to the company and then at the end of the day down to the consumer. So we can't think that this would be a very good thing for anybody in the gun industry, and it has reversed a 40-year-old interpretation. So it'd be nice to hear some explanation as to why they are doing that. Excuse me. On page 42, there's an interesting article called The Weapon Word, and I thought this was very applicable in not only dealing with individuals in the retail business from my end, or the NRA training from my end, or from other people's end as well. But the author, Wayne Van Zwol, says he takes exception to the use of the word weapon in describing firearms that never intended to be weapons, even those that were. He says weapon has nothing to do with a mechanism or type of firearm, only to its use. The problem with calling any firearm a weapon is that it unfairly imputes purpose. Weapon is the odd word out because it specifies use. In other words, what he's saying is that a firearm can be used as a weapon, but not all weapons are firearms, or not all firearms are weapons. A weapon could be anything you pick up. It could be an automobile. It could be a hammer. It could be anything that you're intending to potentially harm another individual or use it for that type of purpose. He goes on to say, sadly, in civilian circles, weapons can be both inappropriate and libelous. He says, the problem with labeling firearms as weapons is that people who know nothing about them will then assume the words are synonyms. I couldn't agree more. We need to be awful careful, particularly when referring to people talking about our sport, talking about our dealings with firearms. We need to make sure that we try to impart terminology that can work on our side. I remember speaking to a buddy of mine who at the time was a firearms manager at Gander Mountain, and we had one of the young ladies that worked at the front desk actually called and asked who the weapons manager was, as opposed to the firearms manager or the hunting manager, whatever the proper title was, and we kind of all got a kick out of it. But if you think of it in that context, it really makes a difference in the perception of what people think when you refer to your handgun or your rifle, whatever it might be, to a weapon. So let's just make sure that when we're out there dealing, particularly with members of the public, that we try to use terminology that works in our favor, as opposed to using a word like weapon, which has a potentially negative connotation when referring to a firearm. So I thought that was a very good article. I'm going to flip ahead to page 57. There is an advertisement here for a new LMT 308, which I think will be certainly popular among the AR-15 crowd. It's a AR-15 platform, obviously by LMT and in the 308 caliber. It says, after nearly a decade in development, the LMT 308 has arrived and taken the shooting community by storm. Designed by the LMT team, it's the latest evolution of the LMT monolithic rail platform. It was designed to give operators accuracy, power, and extended range, etc., etc. However, point being is that LMT now has a 308 AR, and I'm sure those will be quite popular. So if and when I see any of those, or if anybody else happens to see one before I do, surely I would appreciate a review and let you guys know what we think of it. On the front cover of the Guns and Ammo magazine, as well as on page 46, Pat Sweeney has an article regarding the new Smith & Wesson Bodyguard, both in 38 and 380. For those of you who aren't familiar with them, these guns either aren't quite out yet or are just hitting the distributors. We haven't seen any yet at the store. But they're both lightweight, polymer frame. One's obviously a revolver. One's a semi-automatic. They both have a number of features. Most prominently would be an integrated laser system on them. The one that you're likely to see first is going to be the Bodyguard 38, at least that's according to my distributor. Those, they're just being shipped out now, whereas the Bodyguard 380 is going to be a short time in coming, probably sometime in the fall. Pat Sweeney writing, the new Bodyguard 38 is a combination of aluminum and polymer, with the working parts encased in the aluminum frame and the polymer rear enclosing the action spring and providing a grasping location and, due to its flex, dampening felt recoil, and that polymer is reinforced with steel. Flipping the page, the Bodyguard 38 has a couple of other interesting aspects to it, one being obviously the InSight laser module secured to the frame behind the cylinder. Also, the cylinder latch on the 38 is on the top of the frame, so it can be ambidextrous, moving forward to unlock the cylinder from the action. And the front strap of the frame does not rise up behind the trigger guard, so your finger is now properly supported. And they also redesigned the trigger mechanism. That is for the 38 Special 5-shot 38. Compact, lightweight frame. The Bodyguard 380 is obviously a semi-automatic. The slide and barrel are melanite-hardened stainless steel. The frame is polymer, also with a built-in InSight laser. For those of you that like to pocket carry, the safety works like that of a 1911, but the trigger mechanism is a double action only, which is also is mechanism as a hammer as opposed to a striker. So those of you that like to carry cocked and locked, that may be an option for you in terms of that handguard. In addition, there are real sights that are pressed into dovetails at the top as opposed to some of your other comparable handguns, whether they be your Kel-Tec or your Ruger LCPs that don't really have what you would consider any type of sight. The Smith & Wesson Bodyguard 380 does have that. The internals are steel with the trigger assembly pinned in place on the frame, and the polymer portion of the gun of the frame is just to hold the parts in place and give you a place to grab. The magazine is 6 rounds plus 1 in the chamber. And goes on to say that both the guns are shooters, and despite being their light weight, they are both decent guns to fire. And that was the Bodyguards, again, soon to be hitting store shelves by Smith & Wesson, so we all look forward to that. Again, if you guys ever come across one, you have any reviews, or if and when I see one, I'll be happy to pass on information regarding that. Speaking of bodyguards, one of the many aspects overlooked in the goal of self-defense and reliance is training, which I had planned on discussing later in the show. However, one of my guests canceled. But also physical fitness. And from looking at some of the ammo forks and firearm collections on AR15.com, you might get the feeling that guns and ammo are all you need to survive. But the mind and body are your most important assets to survival in any situation, from the shambling hordes of the undead to an everyday trip to the supermarket. I began to think about this subject of my own physical fitness and limitations this past weekend. I've had some back problems in the past, and over the years they've gotten worse and with increasing regularity, but being a typical male tough guy, I've never been to a doctor about it. So on Sunday, I was out in the yard working on my boat, and without thinking, I tried to lift a heavy object. Instead of taking the time to use proper form and lift from the knees upward, I bent over and used my arms and back. Well, I got about 3/4 of the way up when my lower back popped like it's done before. Only this time was the worst ever. It felt like I'd been struck by lightning. Pain was so bad, I was literally frozen in place, unable to move for a minute or two. Eventually, I got down to my knees, but had to call a buddy that lives nearby to come over and help me down from the boat, into the house, and onto the couch. And now, I need to take off work tomorrow and go and try and find a doctor. But from what I understand, the symptoms indicate I've got a herniated lumbar disc. So if you guys are wondering why I may not sound all jazzed up, it sounds like I'm wincing in pain from time to time. It's because I am. I'm sitting here literally feeling like somebody is stabbing me in the back as we speak. Every time I breathe, talk, or move, it is horrible, agonizing pain. Well, what does this have to do with AR15.com, self-defense, and survival, you might ask? Well, if I'd been exercising and stretching like I had been only a few months ago when I was in my routine and used proper form, I could have prevented this injury. Instead, it hurts to move, sit, talk, or breathe. And when I did manage to get myself up today to go into public, I was really just one step above helpless. I guarantee that I couldn't have drawn and fired my carry piece rapidly in the event of an imminent threat, or physically defended myself otherwise. The point is, guns and ammo can only take you so far. So please, take the time to take care of your body and mind, as they are the only things that you get during your lifetime, and you are the only one and you and your family can count on in case of emergency. so please take care of yourself. One thing you can count on is the NRA to defend your Second Amendment right to keep and bear arms. And with that in mind, we have Joe DeBregalis from the NRA on the line. Welcome, Joe.
Hi, Ben. How you doing, my friend?
Oh, I'm hanging in there. I'm sitting here trying to do my best for the Radio Free ARFCOM listeners, and glad to have you on the line tonight. How are you doing, sir?
I'm doing well myself. Thank you very much for asking, and as a fellow back sufferer, I feel your pain.
Yes, indeed, and it's like nothing else. I can tell everybody that. That's not something to look forward to. And, again, proper technique and form when doing the most simple tasks of lifting things and taking care of yourself by exercising and stretching really go a long way to prevent those type of things for everybody out there.
You're certainly right, Ben. Certainly right, but take the Motrin. Try to move as necessary. Follow your doctor's advice. Go to the chiropractor, do whatever it needs, because that's a difficult injury to deal with. But keep the faith.
Yes. And we're going to talk a little bit about getting out to vote tonight, aren't we, Joe?
We are, Ben. One of the topics I wanted to bring up was NRA, in conjunction with our Black Belt Patriot, Chuck Norris, triggered the vote. And this is a grassroots effort in order to get everyone out there to, if they haven't, for whatever strange reason, registered to vote as of yet, get up there, ask your family, do a survey, see who is eligible to vote, and get them registered in their state so they'll be eligible for the most crucial elections in a long time coming up, both the primaries and the general election in November. So if people are interested, they can do it online through the NRA at www.triggerthevote.org, and you'll see Chuck Norris himself with this plea on online in the video, and there'll be more about this program in future updates and through emails and what have you, Ben, but it's something where we really need to get the message out to ensure that we're victorious. There's a lot of chatter on ARFCOM regarding who's endorsing who and what's going on here and what's going on there. But it all starts with the voter. And if we don't enroll our voters, the people who are Second Amendment advocates, who believe in their God-given right, self-defense, they need to make sure that they are registered. Now, some of the reasons when I go to various gun clubs or address audiences on this very subject, then, people don't want to register because they're afraid just to serve on a jury or to be picked or they're on some kind of government list or what have you. But, folks, you know, that's wonderful. But jury duty is a part of our American way. As a law enforcement officer, I was formerly exempt from it. I am no longer. I have to serve, it's called. It's something where if that's the only thing you have to do in relation to registering for voting, it's not a bad thing to do in return. So I would hope that everyone takes the time, surveys their family, talks it up at the gun clubs, and gets people, they can IM me. I'll show them exactly how to do it. It's something where it's cost-free, but it means so much to the bottom line.
And for those of you following along online, please go to triggerthevote.org. That's the website for Trigger the Vote. And one of the things that I found interesting in looking at this site and the things that Joe was saying, and one of the big reasons in reading this book that I discussed a couple weeks ago was Obama Zombies by Jason Matera. And one of the main things that he discussed in the book was that many of the reasons why Obama won the vote, particularly of young people, but not just that, of many people, was his use of technology and the internet and media of all forms, whether it be Facebook or Twitter or, like I said, web videos using YouTube, things like that, was one of the reasons he was able to garner that. So I think that we need to use some of those same tactics that the left used in of the community organizing and the technology. We need to use that in our favor and not be behind the curve on this technology in going forward and trying to get out there and really use the tools that we have available to us to go ahead and get as many people registered by using things like Facebook. You know, if you have a Facebook page, put on there, Trigger the Vote. If you have, you know, your Twitter or your own website, make sure you link to these things to use that technology, because that's really the community organizing that lost us the last election. I think you'd agree with that, Joe, wouldn't you?
Oh, definitely, Ben. The Democrats really embrace the new technologies out there, also with a little help from Acorn. But they were out there registering a lot of people. They got their message across. You know, when you sit there and you get it handed to you, sometimes you have to acknowledge your opponent. They did a great job when it comes down to community organizing, getting their people together and getting them to the polls. We need to get out the vote campaign going. We need to get that. We need to get our people registered. I think ARFCOM is the place to germinate this seed, to make sure that people know. I mean, they're very active. They already write whatever their sentiments on the threads. They put that to paper, send it to their respected elected officials or to the candidates out there. And then the next natural progressive step is to register to vote. But Twitter, Facebook, all the new technologies are out there. This is something that we need to make sure that people know where we stand. I think that's where we really have the momentum going into the elections, Ben, with the 9/12 Patriot movements, the Tea Party. All that is, it's old school, but if you apply it to the new school technology, we're going to have a pretty good showing in November.
And this Chuck Norris is on here he's obviously the honorary chairman of the Trigger the Vote and the Black Belt Patriot. How tough is it to get more people like that out there that can really get the message? I mean, you see an awful lot of the opposite side of the anti-gun and sort of the left-leaning type of people and celebrities in Hollywood, but you know, we need to really try and focus on getting positive. I would even consider saying somebody like Chuck Norris to be a role model or an example for our side out there.
Sure. Well, we're out there. There's a lot of celebrities that have embraced this. Chuck being one of the leading advocates, I had the opportunity to speak with him. I met with him several times throughout my life, but had a good sit-down with him during the last annual meeting. He, his wife, Marshall Teague, people remember Marshall Teague from Roadhouse. He's the one that fought in the climactic ending with Patrick Swayze. Patrick took him out with a thrust to the throat. It was Marshall's been involved in a lot of things, but there's a lot of, I would say, advocates for our rights and advocates for our cause, Ben, but they're hesitant to come out. John Milius, who is a fellow board member, you may know him from Godfather, more recently writing the series Rome on HBO, 44 Magnum, Red Dawn, you know, he goes on and on and on. What is the Intruder? John's great. John will sit there and talk to you and tell you how basically Hollywood's pro-gun. But the people who produce the movies, I mean the funders are not. So if the funders who fund the $20, $30, $100 million productions don't like your politics, they ostracize you and keep you on the fringe. So a lot of these people come out in public and say they're anti-gun. In reality, they're at the range shooting. It's an unfortunate thing, but we've been fortunate enough, John, to call some of the great people out there from Charlton Heston, Tom Selleck, who's a fellow board member. Obviously, we got Ted Nugent. He's a blowtorch no matter where he goes, and he'll never be silenced. John Milius, like I said, Susan Howard from Dallas, Chuck Norris, and there's a lot of other people I can go on and on and on who are sympathetic to our cause and really help us tremendously. But it's a little difficult to grab some of the more high-profile celebrities because there's so much pressure against him or her or the other side.
One of the things, for those of you following along, again, it's triggerthevote.org, and one of the things I would really encourage is to try to get I would try to encourage you guys to put links up to Trigger the Vote on your own websites, or if you know people who own a range or a gun store. I mean, I'm going to try to put the link out on the Radio Free ARFCOM page. I'm going to try to put the link on my gun shop webpage, on the webpage that I do for one of my clients. Because the Trigger the Vote, if you guys are on here, if you start clicking around the site, it's really an easy way that people can get involved. It's almost like it makes it so simple, and it takes all the all the whatever you want to call it, complication or fear out of trying to figure out how to register to vote is very, very simple and easy to use. You basically click on the tab. It enables you to find your polling place. It gives you an option to tell a friend that you can email your friend, and you can look about passing along the message to trigger the vote to a friend. They have the reasons for why you might want to do this. They have a place you can send your own personal story about it to. And then there's two different ways you can help. You can either, if you're already registered to vote, you can help Chuck spread the word, or you can register and then continue to find out what's actually going on with having to figure out how this works. But again, you know, you need to, and then I have the links for Twitter, Facebook, and YouTube. So it's a very very media savvy website in for today's internet, and it gives you lots of different options to how you can personally get involved and how you can involve all your friends and relatives.
Yeah, right, so you are, Ben. And I'll tell you, the NRA has really taken a bull by the horns and embraced technology. We're going digital with a lot of our magazines. We have a fantastic blog, NRAblog.com. Obviously, TriggerTheVote.org. NRAILA.org. I mean, we're constantly trying to reach out. Look no further than Cam and Company, who I'm going to try to bring on the show, with NRANews.com. Jenny Simone does a fantastic investigative job for us there. Cam, obviously, he's out there, and he's constantly covering the events of the day, much like you, Ben. And these are things that the NRA, the outreach, we're trying every which way we can to get the message out. It's been very successful. Our staff down at NRA headquarters in Fairfax really, really works hard. They have a can-do type of mentality, despite some of the criticism out there. They really put 25 hours in a 24-hour day. They really work hard. So we're doing these things, and we're getting out there, but we need you, member, and we need those who are not members. We need people who are concerned about their firearm rights just to embrace some of these things. Spread the word. I appreciate you looking into putting it on your website and here at Radio Free ARFCOM. I know AR15.com is 100% NRA. We're behind it constantly. We also look at the other pro-gun and Second Amendment organizations. So we're doing what we can to attack the issues and the problems of the day every possible facet we can. It's just a matter of getting more people out there. It's cost-free. I would like to say that's cost-free to advocate your freedom. So it's something where we're going to do everything we can. We just need some tools in the fight, and obviously we always need reinforcements, man. So it's a good thing.
And one of the things that I'd spoken about earlier, that was this article from Wayne Van Zwol about when we do relay these messages to people, we need to try to frame them in a way that our argument comes across in a positive way, as opposed to letting our opponents frame our argument in a negative way. One of the main things that you learn about media and about journalism and about the new media technology is that it's not always about what the message is. It's who's conveying the message, and then again, how the message is framed. And we can't let our opponents frame our arguments for us, in particular with regard to the article, with trying to refer to firearms in a positive terminology as opposed to saying, you know, weapons or assault rifles or, you know, high capacity magazines or those buzzwords that have been used against us. And when we use those words to try to convey our message, it only works to trigger the negative connotation that the media has programmed into your average citizen. So I'd really encourage the listeners out there, yes, spread the word, but make sure you look at the NRA and look at the NRA's website and maybe talk to some people from the NRA and try to make sure that when you are out there and if you are trying to get people to vote and join the cause for freedom and for individual rights and responsibilities and in particular our firearm freedoms, let's make sure that when we're out there we frame those messages in the most positive way we possibly can.
Very well said, Ben. Very well said. We always try, and as an instructor yourself, you know that We try to refrain from using the term weapon when we're teaching. It's a pistol, rifle, shotgun, what have you. It's always firearm. And look no further. And everybody in AR-15 will know this from the so-called, evil black rifle. That's what they wanted to do. They outlawed it, or they banned it, purely by the way it looked. That was the sound bite that was regurgitated over and over again on the nightly news. So high-capacity magazines, like you touched on. And, what I'm trying to do now, we've been very, very successful in making sure the AR-15 platform has been used by people who go out there and compete, recreate with, target shoot, and we've been very successful there. My next step is to make sure that people start using the AK. And they go out there, and I mentioned to last week on the show that I was out training with one. Absolutely, because if you look at it, they look at the enemy as the weapon of our enemies. Here's the term weapon again. But if we start recreating with shooting, competing with these platforms, that's where they want to sit there, because unfortunately a lot of crimes are being, because of the popularity of the firearm and because of what's going on, there's so many made that the national media has sit there and basically said these are the evil guns of the future. The way we frame the subject, the way we frame the issue, and the way we speak about our love of what we do, our hobby, is tantamount to how much success we're going to have in the future. Because the wordsmiths out there will definitely slant it to whatever their bias may be. So if someone needs to know, and not all of us are gunsmiths or, gun mavens or armorers of any sort, if there's any time there needs to be a definition, just go on the NRA website. They have a glossary. You can sit there and see exactly. Well, what I've done since the beginning of my advocacy is I print it out. There's leave-behinds, if you will. There's a guide to firearm glossary that the NRA has compiled that I give to everybody I know in the media. So when they're commentating on an issue that involves a firearm, they can refer to this. No one knows they have it. And hopefully, they advocate in our own way of saying, instead of saying assault rifle, they say, they actually name the firearm. That goes a long way when the banners sit there and say, oh, well, it wasn't an assault rifle, which is, as we all know, a fully automatic machine gun. So it's something where when we sit out there and we frame the issue ourselves, that's a very, very good point you brought up, Ben. We're going to benefit in the end.
Is there a location that your average listener, AR15.com member, or journalist would be able to go and find that particular the firearms reference guide that you're referring to there? Because I know that one of the biggest running jokes here, and I'm going to actually see if I can pull this up on my computer and maybe post it as a photo link on AR15.com, but one of the running jokes is the journalist's guide to firearms, and it's a chart, and it shows an AR-15, it shows an AK, it shows a couple pistols, it shows an automobile, it shows, I don't know, a snow shovel or something, and everything on it is an AK-47. That's the perception that is out there among the media, and it's a funny joke and it's a funny photo, but I mean, that's the reality of it. I mean, you hear this terminology bandied around. So, back to my original thing, is there a place that people can find that guide you were referring to?
There is. I don't have access to my computer, but what I'll do is, Ben, is I'll link it when I get off. I'll find it where it is. Perhaps I know Dan Meyer's out there listening, if he can post it, or one of the other guys. I will get it up there as soon as I get off the air.
Yeah, that would be great, because I think that would be a lot to, help some of us, not only whether it's something we can use, or if we know somebody that we might be able to pass that on to, whether it's a journalist or not, whether it's just somebody that might need to know. I mean, heck, I could say that would probably be a good, useful tool for a lot of people that work in gun stores that don't know the proper terminology. You know, one of the main things that I always talk about, and when we talk here on the show, and when I talk to my students or whoever in the public that comes into the gun store, is that, we got to try to educate these people, because most people are using that terminology that they hear on a Hollywood movie or on the nightly news or on CNN or on some type of commentary from the New York Times, and they're repeating these terms because they don't know any better. So I think that having a way to you know, to bridge that gap of knowledge and perception is certainly, like you said, you know, paramount to our achieving the goals of keeping these firearms in the hands of law-abiding citizens.
Well, most definitely, Ben. I mean, it's something we can sit there and just educate ourselves. There's no better advocate that I know of than someone who practices their, as I mentioned, the God-given right to self-defense. And they're the ones who are going to go out there and say, this is the reason why I need this. And when you bring it up every, you know, every Monday you bring forward the armed citizen, that's another reason. So the more we educate ourselves, the better we are to ensure that our freedoms go forward. And it's something where as long as we just take a few extra minutes to educate ourselves, I mean, I've seen time and time again, no matter where I go to speak, who I meet, who I share some ammunition with, there's no better spokesman or woman out there on our issue. And if there's a question, it's right there at your fingertips. So it's something where I'd be more than happy to sit there and try to post that. People can IM me. People can go to the websites and find out themselves. But just these few little things, registering the vote, taking the time to actually vote, read through this glossary, joining the pro-gun organization of your choice. Mine, obviously, I joined them all. But I believe the NRA is the best one out there. Altogether, we make a difference. That's why Forbes magazine every year rates the NRA as the strongest lobbying group in the country because of the membership and the people who affiliate themselves as a member may not particularly be enrolled at that time. So it's something where we don't do everything right, but we're trying to go forward and secure all our rights. And at the same time, I'm always one to say good job to Second Amendment Foundation, the Citizens Committee to Keep and Bear Arms. I spoke to Joe Tartaro today. He's just a great man. I know his son very well, and it's all good things, but there's a lot of people, and there's a lot of people who unfortunately go unnamed, who are on the front lines of our efforts to ensure that we are able to have the rights that we have. So the little things that if we do it together, it means a lot.
Yeah, and just for the record, I mean, the people who aren't voting because they don't think, either they don't want the responsibility of having to, you know, to maybe get drawn for jury duty once every 10 years. I mean, I got, you know, two words for that. Grow up. You know, be an adult. Take a responsibility. There's lots of people, thousands of men and women that have fought and died for our freedoms, you know, for people just to sit on their lazy butts and not go out and vote because either they think that they won't make a difference. Well, if you don't think you're going to make a difference, then I guarantee that you won't because you're sitting there on your butt not getting out there and voting. I mean, it's a self-fulfilling prophecy. And this whole thing about, you know, jury duty or the responsibility or I don't think my vote counts, whatever that is, that's a lot of horse dewey. I mean, that people need to understand that, you know, people died for these rights that we all have. You know, I unfortunately didn't get to serve my country, you know, but I certainly respect and honor and love those who did. So let's make sure that we support them and support their honor and their memory by making sure that each and every time there is an election, we make our voices heard, we get out there and vote, and we make sure that these people who did sacrifice all didn't do it, you know, so you could sit at home and say, oh, well, I'm too lazy to vote, or I didn't have the chance, or blah, 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 I'm apathetic. That, you know, that's people like that are one of the reasons that this country is so screwed up the way it is.
Certainly right, Ben. There's, and you framed it very, very, very well. There's zero reason. If our men and women out there who have, through generations, have shed blood for us, take the 5 minutes it takes to register to vote and then the vote, you can't do that. It is a shame. It truly is. We're going to keep going forward with people like yourself and all the people on the site and all the folks who identify with our cause. We're going to keep going. And just remember, you know, united we're successful, divided we fall. And there's some of the common, I guess, opposition on the threads that there's always somebody, whoever's on the top takes the shots. And I understand that. But look at it from a calm, cool, collective type of view. We're in this together. Are we going to make mistakes? Sure we are. There's sometimes that we're slow to get to the starting blocks. That happens too. But overall, we're always there to help. And we just need to make sure that we all accept the criticism. We all do, as long as it's constructive. when it becomes destructive, we're doing the job for our opponents. We don't need to do that. So very well put, and that was very sage words, my friend.
And, Joe, I really appreciate that. And another person who's going to be talking about fighting the good fights for our rights coming up in the next segment is going to be Valinda Rowe from Illinois Concealed Carry. Joe, I thank you for your time tonight, sir, and it's always a pleasure to talk to you. We will definitely love to have you on next week. And if you have any parting words, I will give you the stage, my friend.
I appreciate it, Ben. To everyone out there, we're doing our very best. Thank you very much for tuning in each and every week. On behalf of the Avila family, we know that you're out there, and we're doing our very best to improve the show. And I think we're doing that on a weekly basis. So anybody needs to talk, please feel free to IM me, Direct Action. Also, if you'd be so kind as to remember our efforts to raise funds for the SEAL and Delta Team operators through our Special Operations Raffle, which is all over the site. Thanks, Ben. Have a great show.
Thanks, Joe. We'll catch you next week. Again, that was Joe DeBregalis from the NRA, and he does bring up a good point I forgot to mention earlier. Make sure you guys visit the Special Operations Support Raffle that's under site notices all over AR15.com, so please take the time to visit that link, and please donate. It is only $10. Whether or not you win a prize or not is inconsequential. That money is going to our operators out there on the front line, again, shedding their blood so that we can be free and here listening to AR15.com on the Internet. And please, if you or your company is interested in supporting or sponsoring Radio Free ARFCOM, please visit Radio Free ARFCOM forum on AR15.com. And send me an instant message to reach out to thousands of potential customers. Also, please visit AR15.com site sponsor links and support Radio Free ARFCOM and AR15.com by purchasing a team membership in the AR15.com store. Next, we will have Valinda Rowe. She is the spokesperson for IllinoisCarry.com. That is IllinoisCarry.com. She will be coming on shortly. She is a firearm instructor, and let's see here. Excuse me, I'm just pulling up her info. Okay, Valinda Rowe, spokesperson for IllinoisCarry.com. Please go ahead and visit that site. She is a firearms instructor and a member of the Illinois State Rifle Association. Having faced several years when her life was in danger, she chose to acquire the necessary skills needed to safely and responsibly handle a firearm for her own defense and the defense of her loved ones. She is now dedicated to educating other women in the safe use of firearms so they, too, are empowered with the ability to protect themselves and their families. As spokesperson for IllinoisCarry.com, she's committed to seeing Illinois join the rest of the nation in passing a right-to-carry law in the state of Illinois. About her organization, again, that is IllinoisCarry.com. It was established in 2004 as a grassroots online action and discussion forum dedicated to bringing the right to carry to Illinois. They recently incorporated as an all-volunteer, not-for-profit, and have been conducting town hall-type right-to-carry meetings all over the state of Illinois and in the city of Chicago to educate folks about being the last state left with no legal provision to carry a firearm for defense. Let's all welcome Valinda Rowe from IllinoisCarry.com. Welcome to Radio Free ARFCOM. Valinda, it's great to have you as a guest on tonight's show.
Well, thank you, Benjamin. It's great to be here with you.
So tell me a little bit about your involvement, not only in Illinois Carry, but going back to your initial introduction in firearms and how you got involved and then where that's led to.
Well, I tell you, it's kind of a wide-ranging story from one extreme to the other. I grew up in a household that did not have any firearms, raised by a mother who was terrified of firearms, and therefore I also was very anti-gun. and would not touch one out of fear. And then later, when I met my husband-to-be in college, he was just the opposite of that. He had grown up with firearms, got his first rifle probably when he was just a young boy in grade school, and would go hunting and plinking. And he changed my attitude about firearms by just very patiently and slowly introducing me to firearm safety rules, and then going ahead and explaining to me how a firearm works. And those two bits of information, the firearm safety rules and how firearms and ammunition work, changed my attitude toward firearms in that I was no longer afraid of them. I still respect firearms, you know, whenever I'm handling one or around someone who is, but that fear is not there. And that's what we strive to do also with the classes that we teach, is we'll hear a lot of women who will say, well, I'm just afraid of firearms. Well, if you don't know anything about them, you need to get the information about the rules. There are, you know, the basic NRA safety rules. If you follow those, you will never, ever accidentally harm someone or harm yourself with a firearm. And once I learned that, it changed my attitude. Then there came a time for a period of years, very frightening years, when my husband and I were targeted by a mentally ill family member. And in going to the authorities, every turn we went, the reply was, well, he hasn't hurt anybody yet, so we can't really do anything about him, even though, it was just a really scary time. And what went from being kind of a fun hobby with shooting firearms took on a very serious meaning in being that tool to protect myself and my loved ones in the threat of this danger.
Yeah, one of the things that we always try to reiterate, in particular on this show, and I speaking with Joe, you know, he's an NRA certified instructor. I'm an NRA certified instructor. You're an NRA certified instructor. And one of the things that we always talk to our students about, and we try to reiterate, is that, and even talking here on the show, firearms are a great sport, a great hobby, a lot of fun, particularly when you have proper instruction and you're introduced to them in a positive way, and you introduce your friends and your relatives and your loved ones to the sport of shooting and to firearms, and that's all well and good, but beyond that, the reason that our founding fathers enumerated this right to keep and bear arms goes to something much more primal, and that's the ability to give, you know, every individual basically a force equalizer, give somebody a firearm, and no longer are they a cripple, or are they a handicap, or are they a person who is maybe infirm or lacks the physical strength to defend against a 300-pound attacker, or whatever the case may be. It's the right to defend ourselves that we need to remember that is the root of it. Yeah, it can be a great hobby, and I remember when I purchased my house, the first two things I bought for it was hurricane shutters, because I'm in Florida, and I bought a 12-gauge shotgun, because if me and my fiance are going to be living here, I want to be able to defend my family. God forbid it should come to that. So I think that getting that out there and making sure that we give the positive message, in particular to people like yourself who may have not been exposed to firearms until a later period in life, or
right,
may have grown up,
mm-hmm,
with somebody who potentially was not, you know, fully supportive of our right to keep and bear arms.
And now I find it, some of my friends find it amusing that for someone to have been so against firearms and afraid of firearms earlier in my life, now, you know, I am just a strong advocate for the right to keep and bear arms, and a strong advocate for getting legislation passed in the state of Illinois so that women, and men too, but specifically women in particular, would have the right to be able to protect themselves against, you know, a threat like that. And they find it amusing, but also they tend to agree with me. Very few of my friends disagree. I'm not a very big woman. I'm under 5'3", 120 pounds or so, and up like you say, against a 300, 250 pound, 300 pound attacker, I don't stand much of a chance with my bare hands. But with a firearm, that makes an equalizer. I would be able to protect myself, hopefully, in a situation like that. Unfortunately, here in the state of Illinois, we're the only state left with no provision whatsoever for an individual law-abiding citizen to carry a firearm for personal protection. And we have 48 states have some form of concealed carry law on the books. Some of those, very few of those states left that are still very restrictive in issuing those licenses, but they do have a law on their books. And then we have Wisconsin, where the Attorney General has recognized openly carrying a firearm for personal protection by law-abiding citizens is legal. That leaves Illinois, the last and only state, with no provision whatsoever. And Benjamin, what's even worse, women should be just furious at what we've been advised to do. If you go to the Illinois State Police website, it gives advice to women in case they are faced with a confrontation or a sexual assault. And there on the website, it says it advises women to protect themselves with a hair comb or a car key. And women should be, in the state of Illinois, should be outraged by that, that we would be relegated to something so ineffective and useless in the face of someone who intends to do you bodily harm or kill you, a hair comb or a car key. Are you kidding me? In all the states around us, Wisconsin, Missouri, Kentucky, Indiana, all of those women have a right to carry an effective means of self-defense. And I just find myself in disbelief that our Illinois State Police website would advise women in that way to protect themselves, and then to have the current governor, Governor Pat Quinn, with his name up there at the top of that page saying, yeah, this is how women should protect themselves. It's outrageous. And furthermore, it goes on to say that if all else fails, I don't want to gross out your listeners here, but if all else fails, that a woman could stick her fingers down her throat and force herself to throw up, and I guess somehow that's going to make her unattractive to the attacker. But it's just ludicrous that women in this state would be relegated to that sort of thing to protect themselves.
Well, that's got to be I'm just shaking my head here as you're speaking and just disbelief. I mean, it's just infuriating that it would be, I mean, of all the things, I mean, where does that leaves you with, they're basically saying, you know, sorry about your luck. That's what they're saying to women.
Yes, and it says
state.
On there, you know, you might want to, you know, it's best probably not to fight. You know, that if you do decide to fight, you know, you're basically taking your life in your own hands. Well, the woman living in the state of Illinois takes her life in her own hands because she's being denied the right to protect herself in the way that women all across this nation are able to protect themselves. And that's part of what makes me so determined to win this battle. We have, in our state constitution since 1970, it says the right to keep and bear arms is subject to police, to the police interpretation or the police safety or whatever, public safety. And it just, we're hoping that with the ruling that came down from Heller versus D.C. and McDonald versus the city of Chicago, that is going to help us get that rectified. You know, having your right to keep and bear arms subject to police powers, that's not what the Supreme Court ruled in Heller versus D.C. They ruled that it was an individual right. And then with McDonald versus Chicago, the U.S. Supreme Court now has ruled that decision applies to state and local governments as well as to the D.C. So we're hoping that when our legislature gets back into session, that those two things will serve to shore up our argument and get our legislators on the move to get in line with the rest of the nation.
Again, on the line we have Linda Rowe from IllinoisCarry.com. I would encourage the listening audience that's online right now to visit IllinoisCarry.com, and we're just speaking about some of the outrageous laws they have in the state of Illinois. And obviously this is just absurd to anyone who would think that this is even giving people a right at all of self-defense. I mean, I know from being a firearms instructor, I tell people all the time, you know, once you get your permit, you know, you need to pick a firearm that you're going to carry, because once you have your permit, you know, everybody, at least that I know, we all love our full-size 1911s, but in Florida, when you're wearing a tank top and a pair of flip-flops and some shorts, you're not going to be dragging a 3.5-pound gun down the street when it's 100 degrees outside. The point being is that you need to carry, and you need to carry all the time, and then you need to have the right gun you're going to carry. But first and foremost, you have to have the ability legally to carry. And we're talking about Arizona now, that if you're a member, if you're a citizen in that state, you don't even need a concealed carry permit to carry a gun. And I'm 100% in favor of that for the NRA pushing for a nationwide type of thing. But
and
for Illinois to
that
be
we have
position,
Arizona who completely acknowledges and recognizes and respects the right to keep and bear arms. And we call Illinois, the state of Illinois is a rights-denied state. It is a rights-denied. Our rights are being denied here in the state of Illinois.
Now, let's weave this into your organization, IllinoisCarry.com. And where is some of this coming from? You know, Illinois, other than Chicago, from what I understand, is a primarily relatively rural state, other than the big city of Chicago. Is that not correct? And I would assume,
well, I have been told that for years, that, you know, south of Interstate 80 is pro-gun, north of Interstate 80 is anti-gun, and I am finding that has been a myth all of these years. Illinois Carry is organizing and holding town hall meetings all over the state, specifically focused on the right to carry and educating the people of Illinois that we are the last and only state left with no provision for carrying a firearm for personal protection. And what we are finding, even up in the northern part of the state, in the northeastern quadrant, the Cook County, Collar counties, that the folks there realize that Chicago's anti-gun stance, its handgun ban, has not worked. It was on the books for almost three decades, 28 years, and we've had town hall meetings up in that area that are standing room only, Benjamin, standing room only for people that want to know more about how to get a law passed here in the state of Illinois. And I am...
Belinda, are we there?
CARRY.com, and we are dedicated to seeing a right to carry bill passed here in the state of Illinois. We are an online action and discussion forum. We're an all-volunteer group, and our emphasis on it right now is on educating the people of Illinois in what they need to do to help get a law passed. And a big part of that is getting behind legislators who understand what the Constitution means and who will support the right to carry, and helping them to get them elected, to make a change in Springfield so that we can root out some of Mayor Daley from Chicago's anti-gun legislators up there that keep bringing his agenda down to Springfield. And we are having a great reception inside the city of Chicago. We had a rally back on July the 9th, Friday, July the 9th, right downtown, right outside Mayor Daley's office at Thompson Plaza, in in celebration of McDonald versus Chicago, and had a great turnout. And the people there know that the gun ban there was a social experiment that just went terribly, terribly wrong. And those folks are just as adamant about getting their rights back. So I think there's still some inner city fears about firearms because, again, like me, we have three decades of people growing up without firearms in their home, without firearms being safety being taught. So we have those kind of fears to combat yet, but I am just amazed at the kind of support we're getting with these town hall meetings.
Digging a little bit deeper, what role do you see, from your perspective, Chicago and Chicago politics and Mayor Daley in the whole reasoning? Or how much weight does Chicago carry, and how much of a bulwark have they put up against passing some of this stuff that you're fighting so diligently for?
That's our hurdle right there. When you look at the number of legislative districts in Chicago's Cook County area, those numbers that they send to Springfield as far as representatives and senators far outnumber the rest of the legislators from the rest of the state. So that's why we've got to reach some of those legislators. And we are hearing from some of them saying, well, gee, you know, we really didn't realize Illinois was the only state left. Maybe we need to take another look at this. But Mayor Daley does hold a power over so many of those legislators because that's where they get their support from. And I think possibly now that the Supreme Court has ruled that this is an individual right, that the state and local governments cannot infringe on it, they are going to be more pressured to respect the rights of law-abiding citizens. And we're hoping that that hold that Mayor Daley has had on those legislators is going to be weakened because of those two Supreme Court decisions.
It sounds to me like the legendary Chicago political machine is one of, if not the biggest challenge you face. But can you tell me a little bit about what, other than including that, but also what are some of the other challenges IllinoisCarry.com faces in regards to fighting for the citizens of Illinois' right to keep and bear arms, and in particular carry arms?
Well, I think with the Chicago problem, it's a matter of a huge hurdle is getting into the communities and getting the word out about, because there's like a media blackout, and that's why we appreciate programs like yours. It's like there's a media blackout where they won't cover this issue. They don't want to get the word out there in a positive manner about firearms ownership and how it is working, how concealed carry and other programs are working throughout the rest of the country. And so that's a big hurdle that we have there in Chicago. But we also are finding now that the Supreme Court has ruled in McDonald versus Chicago, that was some publicity that they absolutely could not overlook. You know, I mean, that was a history-making decision, and so it did get some media attention in Chicago. And what we've found since then are these neighborhoods where they are facing this violence and being totally disarmed and not being able to protect themselves, they're contacting us at Illinois Carry and saying, you know, we are concerned about this issue. We've heard about your town hall meetings. Will you help us organize a town hall meeting? Will you come into our neighborhood and help us educate our community about the right to carry and how it is working in the rest of the country? That's phenomenal to me. That has just surprised me and thrilled me to no end that we're seeing that kind of support in there. The other hurdles that we face in the rest of the state, again, is just educating people in the metropolitan areas that, we hear, well, I'm just not comfortable with the idea of people carrying guns around. And so we try to enlighten them to the fact that anytime they travel outside the state of Illinois, they're traveling with, they're shopping with, they're going to the movies with, they're sitting in restaurants next to, they're parking in parking spaces next to everyday law-abiding citizens who are carrying a firearm for personal protection. And they get this surprised look on their face and say, what do you mean? Well, all those other states have provisions for license to carry. And the beauty of it is you don't know who is carrying and who is not, and neither does the bad guy. And so crime rates have gone down in those areas. And so that gives them a different perspective when they say they're not comfortable with that idea. I say, do you ever go to Indiana for anything? Do you ever go to Wisconsin or Missouri or, you know, do you ever go anywhere outside the state? Then you've experienced it and didn't know it because it's not a problem. Carrying a firearm for personal protection by law-abiding citizens is not a problem.
And
so
like
that's our goal, is education, education, education.
And like in the other states, I mean, do you think that, I mean, most of the states, I mean, Florida, we were one of the first to do the concealed carry, and of course all the anti-gun media was predicting bloodbaths. I mean, I see no reason why that would be any different now. Then if you guys pass the law tomorrow in Chicago Illinois saying that you guys could carry firearms, I mean, these bloodbaths that the anti-gunners are predicting just never materialize. But
no, and they have predicted it in every state that has considered passing a law. Whenever the bills were making their way through the process, you heard time and time again in every single state, it will be like the old Wild Wild West. People be shooting each other over parking spaces. And it has not happened in a single state. And here we are, the last state left. And they're still using that same argument. It wasn't a month ago. Mayor Daley was saying, well, we might as well just go back to the old West then and settle this with a shootout in the street. I mean, he's still quoting that argument after it has not happened in a single state.
And
I have a Florida license to carry.
Excellent.
And I've had it for going on 8 years now. And I am so appreciative to the state of Florida that they will issue licenses to people who live outside the state, because my license, I think right now, is good in like 30 different states. And that is a great tool when I go speak to legislators. When I say, I can pull my card out and I can show them my license to carry, and I say, you know, the state of Florida trusts me to carry a firearm for my own personal protection, and so do, you know, the 30 states that honor this license. The only time that I have to be in fear for my life is when I come back home to the state of Illinois. Before I cross the state line, I have to stop. I have to case up my firearm. I have to render myself a potential victim just to come back into the state of Illinois. That a firearm has to be unloaded and completely enclosed in a case. And when I show them that license, you know, they look at me like, wow, I didn't know this. You know, I didn't know, one, I didn't know people in Illinois could get a license outside the state. And it gives them a different perspective on what happens to me and other law-abiding citizens when they come back into the state of Illinois.
Excellent. Again, this is Valinda Rowe from IllinoisCarry.com. I encourage everybody to visit IllinoisCarry.com. They have a forum there. They also are a nonprofit organization. If you want to volunteer or donate, I'm sure Valinda would appreciate any help and any support you guys can get. Those of you guys, you listeners out there in the land of AR15.com, please go to the Illinois Hometown Forum and spread the word. I'm sure she would appreciate your help. Valinda, any closing thoughts for Radio Free ARFCOM and AR15.com?
Sure. A couple of things. If you go to IllinoisCarry.com and register, you can go into our discussion forums and hope that people will feel at home, pull up a chair, and join in the conversation there. We send out email alerts whenever action is needed like emails to legislators or letters, or if there's going to be a meeting or town hall meetings and that sort of thing, they can go there and sign up for those email alerts, and we will keep them posted. We also have a fundraiser going on right now. Les Baer has donated a custom Premier 1911, and Springfield Armory has donated an XD 9mm, XDM 9mm, and they're helping us use those as a fundraiser, and they can go there and read more about it on our website. And also, I just want to say that I appreciate ARFCOM and AR-15. And back when I wasn't quite so busy, I would visit the hometown AR-15 every day. And now I don't get there every day, but I get there as often as I can. And one of my favorite dates with my husband is when we can find some spare time to go to the range. I like to take my Colt AR-15 and run some rounds downrange with it. So I used my AR-15 to qualify for the CMP program. So it's near and dear to my heart. And I really appreciate what you folks do and appreciate your website. And we hope that your members will also come check out IllinoisCarry.com. We would love to see them.
And we really appreciate you having the time of your day to spend with us here on Radio Free ARFCOM. And we do appreciate your efforts for Illinois Carry, and you're welcome anytime to check back in with us, Valinda, and thanks again for appearing on Radio Free ARFCOM.
Thank you. You bet, Benjamin.
Thank you.
Uh-huh.
Bye-bye. Have a great night. Continuing on with Radio Free ARFCOM, we're going to try to get one more guest on tonight. I did have a cancellation, but reaching out to some of the membership, we should have a guest coming on to talk about a topic that I just came up with. But first, let's make sure that if you guys are interested in advertising or supporting Radio Free ARFCOM, please visit the Radio Free ARFCOM forum on AR15.com and send me a message if you'd like to reach out to our listeners. As always, please visit AR15.com site sponsors and support Radio Free ARFCOM and AR15.com by purchasing a team membership in the AR15.com store. Your support helps everyone, and we are here on Radio Free ARFCOM thankful to not only our guests, but also to AR15.com for hosting the show. We thank our producers as well. And one of the things that I want to talk about now, let's see if we can get our guest on. I was driving home. I worked one day at the range this weekend on Saturday, and I brought a few firearms with me in case I had some extra time to use them. And as I'm driving down the highway, and I've got an AR-15 laying next in my back seat, and I got my sidearm that I wore at the range, and I got a shotgun or two that I was, you know, had for some clay shooting. And I just thought to myself, you know, I'm a safe driver. I don't speed. I pretty much drive like an old man because my philosophy is I don't ever have anywhere that I need to get to that's worth either risking my life by driving fast and erratically or putting my insurance at a higher premium for getting a ticket. And one of the things that I thought of that might make a good show topic for Radio Free ARFCOM, we'll be talking to somebody who was in the law enforcement profession and maybe has done road patrol or highway patrol, and talk about, you know, what's the proper way to interact with law enforcement. And while if you do have a firearm in your vehicle, obviously many of us here on Radio Free ARFCOM and AR15.com's website, obviously we're there because we're firearm owners, we're enthusiasts, and we're going to be going to the range. You know, some of us, you know, myself, I go there once a week. When I'm at the range, you know, I'm open carrying. When I'm coming to and from, I obviously have firearms in the vehicle. So we have with us ARFCOM member, and I posted this in the law enforcement Brothers of the Shield forum, and I do appreciate the response. We have with us Dan Littlefield, who, let me pull up his info, is a deputy, and he's here to talk with us about interacting with law enforcement, whether you have a firearm in your vehicle or whether you have it on your person. And I'd like to just pick his brain a little bit about not only handling the interaction, but making sure that not only are we respectful and to our law enforcement officers, but also the way to talk to law enforcement, that they'll respect us as well. And that way we can both have a positive interaction. Dan, are you there?
Yes, I am, Benjamin. How are you today?
I'm doing well. I apologize for the short notice, but we did have a cancellation at the very last minute. But I really appreciate you stepping up to the plate and coming here to speak with us. Did you catch my intro about what I'd like to speak with you about?
Yes, I did.
And what's your take on that?
Well, you know, it's interesting because when you're talking particularly a traffic stop, it's a high-stress situation for everybody involved. For peace officers, traffic enforcement is our highest-risk activity, either from, you know, being attacked by the subject in the car or by being struck by a, you know, passing motorist. So it's a high-stress activity on that end. And then it's also a high-stress activity for the citizen who's in the car because, you know, they've been pulled over, the police have pulled them over, then they feel like they've done something wrong or they're guilty or they're upset. So it complicates everything that goes on.
Right. Sorry, I was just typing on the forum here, letting everybody know that we had you on here. But I do agree. I mean, I can imagine that it is a stressful encounter for both parties. And what can the citizens, and if they're the person being pulled over, what can they do to try to de-stress or de-escalate that situation and make it at least, if not a positive experience, something that isn't going to potentially escalate?
Sure. Well, the first thing is the citizens should recognize that the officer is concerned about his safety. And the very first thing is deciding where you pull over. And people that pull over so that they're just right on the edge of the fog line, for example, so that the officer is forced to do a passenger side contact or something like that, always makes it tough as well. So just thinking about where you're going to pull over. If for example, there's no good place, now a good officer will normally not initiate a traffic stop until there is a good place to pull over. But if the officer is inexperienced or new or feels they need to make the stop in a hurry, they may initiate it before they should have. And so if you can just make sure there's a good, safe place to pull off, that's a good start. And if you feel like you have to go for a little distance, you know, you just hit your hazard lights, and that lets the officer know, okay, he's seen me, he's just looking for a place to pull off. So that's the first step. Then I always recommend to people at night, turn on overhead light in their vehicle, and now see, different jurisdictions are different on what an officer will ask for on the approach. But normally, in Texas, we'll ask for a license or proof of insurance. I always recommend people to keep your insurance with your license in your wallet, so that it's right there, and you just take your wallet, and you have it in your hands on your steering wheel. The officer comes up, because the first thing the officer is going to look for is hands. Look to see everybody's hands and make sure that everything is safe for them when they make the approach. And if the overhead light is on, I mean, that tells the officer as well that the citizen is trying to enhance their safety. So that all that goes a long way towards making it an easier stop. So from the officer's perspective.
And now... When would the subject of firearms come up in the vehicle? Obviously, if there's one visible, you know, obviously the laws vary state by state, but in some states you're actually required to carry long guns openly. But when in the process of the traffic stop, potentially would there be a type of question or a type of interaction that would lead to the discussion of, hey, this person may have a firearm in the vehicle. How do we go about handling this?
That usually occurs fairly early in the stop, if the officer asks. Now, I personally don't usually ask if there are any weapons in the vehicle. Okay, some officers ask it as a matter of routine, and it just depends. But normally, an officer will first come up and will say, introduce themselves, and let you know that they are in fact an officer, and make sure you get a chance to see that they're uniformed or that they're in a marked unit, and then they'll ask for your license and proof of insurance. Because one of the most important things for officers, of course, is to identify the person they're having contact with. Sometimes an officer will say, do you have any weapons in the vehicle? It probably especially will come up if it's a concealed handgun license holder and they're required to or they chose to give the concealed handgun license with their driver's license. So that's, do you have any weapons in the vehicle? And what we always encourage is if we're asking about it and you say yes, I have a gun in the car or something, so without reaching for it, just tell me where it is. So, but the good thing is if you have all your information in hand already, you should be in pretty good shape. You won't have to, reach towards anything and just take care of everything right there. Now, it is, the one thing I don't recommend is, for example, you have your license and, it says license, proof, insurance. Well, my insurance is under my .357 Magnum in the glove box. Because then the citizen is at a point where they're going to be reaching for their gun and the insurance at the same time. And that just complicates everything. So if you can make sure that the important information is separated from firearms, then you're in good shape. So.
Right. I always tell my customers and the students that when we do teach the, the concealed carry permit course, and the most common question that we have other than the concealed carry itself is, well, what about how can I keep the firearm in my vehicle? And I always tell them, I wouldn't recommend keeping it in your glove box where you keep your license and your registration. If you're going to keep it in your vehicle, put it in your center console and keep your license and your registration separate from your firearm in particular. And then if you do get pulled over and the officer asks you a question, don't say, I have a gun. Just say, officer, I'm licensed to carry a firearm legally. Here's the location. While you've got your hands on the steering wheel and you say, hey, officer, sir, I have a legally, owned firearm. Here's its location. And then wait for the response from the officer.
Right. Yeah, there's no reason to volunteer information on the traffic stop. If the officer asks about weapons, then you should go ahead and, this, that, and the other. But I wouldn't immediately on contact say, well, I have a gun, officer, or anything like that, just like you were saying. I mean, just kind of follow the officer's lead and let him, conduct the interview, get whatever information he or she needs.
And now how about if you pull up, just for example, now, like I said before, I mean, I drive like an old man. I don't speed. I don't drive crazy because, hey, that's just not me. It's just not how I drive. It's not worth the hassle for me. And I work in a gun store. And on the weekends, I work at the range as either a range officer or a firearms instructor. And so I've routinely got at least one firearm in the vehicle. Tell me, I guess I'd be asking more for what your reaction would be to an individual, your average ARFCOM member. What's an officer's reaction when you for whatever reason stumble across somebody like myself who's got multiple firearms in the vehicle? What's your sort of thought process and how do you base your assessment of that individual on what factors, I guess?
It's interesting. It's a hard answer to give a general answer because, every officer is different. Every officer has different experiences. Some of them are anti-gun. Some of us are pro-gun. Not many of us are pro-gun, but, some of us are anti-gun. And so, you'll probably get a whole range of spectrum. The thing for us is, we look for indicators of the individual, because it's the individual that puts us at risk, not the inanimate objects that are lying around. And so if you have gang tats and you're throwing gang signs and you're in a high crime neighborhood, you're going to be handled differently than, you know, if you're reasonably well dressed, you know, clean shaven or at least, you know, neat and clean appearance and polite. So, I mean, that's really, the indicators that we look for. The other thing that, of course, is always the advantage is the sooner we can identify you, because as soon as I have your driver's license, you know, I'll contact my dispatch or run it on my MDT, and then that'll tell me, you know, no history, you know, one contact 4 years ago or whatever. And that goes a long way towards assuring that there aren't any issues.
Yeah, I was talking to one of my buddies, and I guess we're not necessarily a buddy, but he's a regular of mine at the gun store, one of these guys who likes to come in and chew the fat with everybody. And he's a former law enforcement and also did some combat tours in Iraq. And I was just talking to him. I said, hey, if you see me in the convenience store, and I'm one of these guys, you know, I wear a tucked-in shirt, you know, I'm clean, relatively clean cut. You know, pretty much average, you know, middle-class white boy. Not that race has anything to do with it. We have to put the disclaimer out there, obviously. But, you know, a clean, well-spoken person, you know, but I tell him, you know, when I'm on my way to work at the gun store, you know, I have to open carry as a part of my job, just like law enforcement has to carry for theirs. Now, of course, and it makes it a giant pain in the butt for me if I have to, every time I step out of my truck, to have to untuck my shirt, cover my firearm, and then when I get back in, tuck it back in. So I wear one of those, you know, laugh at me all you want, but I have one of those concealed carry vests for the reason that, not to necessarily hide the fact that I'm carrying, but to be legally compliant with the whole concealed carry thing. So I guess my question is how do you normally deal with people that are the licensed concealed carry holders in regards to whether or not it be a traffic stop or any other interaction with them?
Well, that it's funny because I carry vests. I use vests like that pretty frequently as well. I mean, you know, 10 years ago I used inside the waistband holsters, but I've since filled up most of the space, you know, inside my waistband. So I've gone mostly to vertical scabbards now. And that means, you know, untucked shirts occasionally will work for me, but I usually wear a vest because it's more comfortable. But I'll tell you an interesting story. I was in North Texas at a football game, and I was carrying, because I always carry, and I had a vest. And the vest I had was kind of uncomfortable, was kind of a heavy wool vest. And while I was walking over to get a Gatorade from the refreshment stand, I was stopped by two officers there. And they asked me, they said, you know, are you aware as a concealed handgun license holder that you can't carry at a sporting event? I said, yes, sir, that's my understanding. Well, somebody said that they saw a holster. They didn't see a gun, but they saw a holster, which I'm thinking probably was a bit of a exaggeration. But the point was, here I was, only person at a football game in North Texas in August when it's 90 degrees out, and I'm wearing this big wool vest. And so they had a contact with me. Now, it turned out fine because I'm a peace officer. It would have probably turned out less fine for a concealed handgun license holder because they were correct. A concealed handgun license holder shouldn't have been carrying there. But the contact was very professional, and they were very nice about it. And I'm confident that as officers, if it was not a place where concealed handgun license holders were prohibited from carrying, there wouldn't have been any contact at all. And that's pretty typical. If you're allowed to carry a concealed handgun, carry it all you want. And officers don't have a big concern about that. Even if you're in the I'm carrying concealed or you're carrying the black tactical fanny pack sort of thing, it's not going to be a concern to them.
Right. And that was one of the issues that I was saying, and you know, me not being in law enforcement, I was picking my buddy's brain and I said, you know, well, you know, how is the interaction going to go? And he said he was describing to me the whole casual contact. And once they determine that, you know, you're not a threat to them or you're not breaking any laws, you're probably going to be okay. But one of the main things to remember is that, you know, respect is a two-way street, and to not get agitated and to not act like, you know, this guy's ruining your day just because he wants to make sure that for whatever reason you're a law-abiding citizen, which, you know, say what you will, but, you know, that's their job. That's the job of law enforcement. So I think it's, you know, important to remind people that in not every case or not even in most cases, you know, the police are really not your enemy. It's, you know, they're pretty much on the same side. I would think 99.9% of the time is the people that are carrying concealed.
Yeah, I think it's interesting. You know, some officers have a better bedside manner than others. You know, and some of them will come off very blunt, and you just kind of have to let that, you know, that's water off the duck's back. And I always tell people, you know, if you disagree with the traffic citation that you get, you don't argue it on the side of the road, because the officer that just wrote you the citation is probably going to be the least sympathetic audience. If you think you have a good case, you take it to the judge. But arguing on the side of the road makes no sense. And it's the same thing if you have a contact with the officer and the officer is less than professional, you still need to maintain the high road, but follow up with his supervisor. I mean, if you really feel it was that bad. But you'll find, yeah, normally if you treat an officer with respect, officer will treat you with respect, and it just becomes a positive reinforcement.
Right, and I think that many law enforcement, or in fact most law enforcement, is now becoming, you know, much more, I don't know, informed, well aware, or at least, you know, like I said, aware of the fact that nowadays there are more and more and more people carrying concealed. In Florida, you know, we've had it just about the longest of anybody with a concealed carry, and for most people around here, I mean, in my interaction with people, I almost expect just about everybody to be carrying. And so I could imagine as an officer, you would probably find a routine and the best approach to deal with people if there was a reason to even interact with them at all.
Yes. Well, and we occasionally get bad publicity because – well, an example down here in Texas, they've revised the rules several times as far as carrying a firearm in your vehicle, specifically a handgun. And we had a district attorney up in Harris County who said he's basically going to ignore the new law and still handle things the same way, which was a ridiculous thing for him to say. And there probably wasn't more than a handful of street officers out of thousands in Harris County that we're going to follow his lead on that anyway, but it sets a confrontational tone between peace officers and law-abiding citizens that's wrong. So, and every time there's a change in the law, which in Texas we get about a change every 2 years, some good, some not as good, and so there's always an adjustment period, you know, where, and I'm sure it was the same thing with Florida 20 years ago. It was the same thing in Texas back, I guess it was in 96, when we first got concealed handgun licenses. There was an adjustment, period of adjustment. And then everybody got comfortable, and you move on.
Let me ask you a question just for those of us who might be curious. Texas sort of has the reputation as being a very firearms-friendly state, but I understand that it's not quite the whole cowboy atmosphere that everybody thinks. You still don't have open carry, as far as I know, correct?
That is correct. Open carry is illegal in Texas. That's for handguns. long arms, there really is no regulation to speak of regarding long arms. Concealed handgun license holders can carry concealed. Anybody now can have a handgun in their car. They need to keep it concealed in Texas. So, yeah, so it's different from, well, obviously, what's it, Alaska and Vermont, is it, I think?
Now Arizona, you can open
and
carry.
And now Arizona, yeah. I mean, those are as wide open as you go. Texas has a long tradition of firearms ownership, and I think that's probably where we get our reputation. So, because, you know, my experience, I get a lot of contacts with people who are armed. So, I mean, we plan on every call for service or every traffic stop that there's probably a firearm in the car, probably a firearm in the house.
And what are, quick, you know, in a few minutes, what are some of the things that just off the top of your head, people should, or you say the main things that people should avoid? And I'm not talking about obvious criminal behavior, you know, like attacking police officers or whatever, but I mean, for a common citizen, what are some of the things that generally speaking, whether you're in, you know, whatever state you're in, should avoid when dealing armed with a law enforcement officer?
I think that the most difficult situations are the ones where there's been an incident of some sort, whether it's a shooting or an attack or some act of violence, and perhaps the armed concealed handgun license holder or the armed citizen is there maybe as a witness and maybe actually participated, you know, in defending a third party or defending themselves. And I think the hardest thing, and it's also a common problem with off-duty officers as well, is to make sure that responding uniformed officers don't feel that you're a threat when they arrive on the scene. Because when officers get an initial call, they got it from some frightened person on 911 who was probably looking through the window or was driving by or something and didn't know what was happening. And so the information they got was probably wrong. And so they get to the scene and they're not sure who is who. So the most important thing is to follow the instructions of the officers, whatever it is. So if an incident has occurred, say, for example, a citizen had to draw their gun and threaten someone and that threatened person ran away and maybe a third party called it in or something, they should reholster their gun and get it concealed again and just stay and wait with their hands clear. And then when the responding officers get there, they need to follow the instructions, whatever those are, and give the officers time to sort out what happened and get all the information they need. That's probably the most important thing because that's the highest risk time for everybody involved, and it's the easiest one to make a mistake.
What's that? Go ahead, finish.
That's really, I think, the key area for people to focus on.
And, Dan, I thank you so much. I know it was short notice, but you did an excellent job. That was really a good interview, and I actually wish that we'd have had a little bit more time to promote it because, like I said, I was thinking about that subject as I was driving, and I really wanted to cover it, but I am going to try to promote it enough to make sure that people will go back to listen to it on the when I post the actual link to the rebroadcast that we can listen to on Radio Free ARFCOM on AR15.com. But, Dan, thank you so much for being on the program. If there's anything that we can do for you or if you'd like to contribute again in the future, I'd be happy to have you. Thanks again.
Well, thank you. You take care, and good luck to everyone out there. Be safe.
Thank you very much, and likewise to you, sir. That was Dan Littlefield, one of our Brothers of the Shield here on AR15.com. Pinch hitting as one of the guests that I had scheduled was unable to appear. So we certainly thank him, and actually that turned into a real good segment. We've got just a few minutes left here. So now, Radio Free ARFCOM, we will go to the zombie tip of the week. This week, we bring to you the zombie garden gnome. If you go on the Radio Free, the AR15.com zombie forum and go down and scroll down, there's a link. It's on a website called thinkgeek.com. And it says, there's a zombie on your lawn. Nobody was quite sure what caused it. An alien pathogen riding the tail of Halley's Comet? Some government rage virus. Radiation from a downed satellite? Your guess is as good as ours, but one thing's for sure. The dead are rising, and they are hungry for your brains. Now, it says, of course, it's illegal to sell reanimated corpses, so we've had to rely on resin facsimiles to stand in for a frightening visage of death. Watching over your garden is a monstrous shambler, pale, vile, and seemingly hungry. Of course, you know better. He's just a terrifying statue. From the mid-torso up, he rises out of your freshly tilled and mulched begonias, ready to devour the brains of the next interloper he comes across. Guaranteed to scare away any trespasser without the headaches of accidentally releasing a real zombie. All those complications, bodies, and police forms. Who needs the hassle? Your fresh resin garden zombie comes packed in three pieces and assembles in seconds. That is the garden zombie from ThinkGeek.com. I hope you enjoyed that. We also have an update on World War Z, the movie. That is World War Z, the screen version of Max Brooks' World War Z book. Brad Pitt is apparently going to be not only the actor, but also his production company is involved. And that movie is set targeting a summer 2012 release for the film. So all you Z-heads out there in general AR15.com Zombie Central, be sure to keep up with that. I've got a few zombie books ordered from Amazon.com. I'll be sure to review them all for you once the flesh-eating scourge of humanity novels I can finish with those. At any rate, please be sure to click on the link for the Special Operations Support Raffle on AR15.com. It's only $10 to enter, and all the money goes directly to help Special Forces operators on the front lines fighting for our freedom. Thanks to AR15.com for hosting the show. And most importantly, thanks to the Radio Free ARFCOM fans. And be sure to accidentally the whole show to all your friends. And please visit AR15.com site sponsor links and support the site by purchasing a team membership in the AR15.com store. As always, I encourage the listening audience to submit show topics, ideas, and potential guests as soon as possible so I can book them ahead of time. My name is Benjamin. Please be sure to tune in next week for another great show. But until then, this has been your Radio Free ARFCOM.
The chair is against the wall. The chair is against the wall. John has a long mustache. John has a long mustache.